Welcome to Big Blend Radio, where we celebrate variety and how it adds spice to quality of life. Hey, everybody, welcome to this special episode of Big Blend Radio. This is a show that is featured on our brand new podcast, Women Making History. It's about celebrating women from the past, the future. Yes, we're going to the future and the present moment. And today we're going to be focusing on women in writing. And also this goes out on our Toast to the Arts channel that obviously covers books, music, the arts, and also our big daily blend show that airs every day, first thing in the morning to get you started. And, you know, we like to cover kind of, you know, holidays are celebrated on the day and everything like that with our big daily blend. But today we're going to talk about an event coming up in Tucson, the Tucson Festival of Books. I think they've been going for around 15 years now. You can go to TucsonFestivalOfBooks.org, and this is going to be held March 9th and 10th. So I think 2024, just in case you're listening to this a year later. So this is an annual event. So if you don't go this year, plan for next year. It is just one of those iconic festivals if you love the written or spoken word. So if we're going to talk about the Tucson Festival of Books, we're going to bring our friends on from the Tucson Sisters in Crime. And whenever we get into these shows with these ladies, I don't know, I wanted to say blood spills somewhere. Somebody gets poisoned, something. It might be an iguana that eats off another iguana. Who knows? Like, I'm serious. It gets interesting. But I love celebrating women in this way, women in a craft that sometimes can be very solitary. So I think these kinds of organizations like the Sisters in Crime, which is around the country and also international, is an amazing, supportive group of, you know, ladies and men. But also, you know, in the group, some are in Tucson, some are living somewhere else, but writing about Arizona or Tucson. So check out the website, TucsonSistersInCrime.org. First up on this wonderful panel, we've got, what, 9 people on the panel today. Woo! We got Eva Eldridge. You know Eva's on our shows all the time. She's a travel writer for our Parks and Travel magazine and Big Blend magazines. And she edited 3 editions of Sanskrit, which is an award-winning art and literary magazine in Tucson. And she curated and edited Trouble in Tucson. This is an awesome anthology featuring written works by many members of the Tucson Sisters in Crime. You can go get it from their website, TucsonSistersInCrime.org. But if you go to the Festival of Books, apparently you can get a copy right there. You can keep up with Eva and all the links I'm talking about. We're even going to put a link to a playlist of interviews with authors from Tucson Sisters in Crime that we've done over the years in the show notes. So check that out. But welcome back, Eva. How are you?
I'm great. How are you, Lisa?
Doing good. I felt like I just talked like the whole show's done now. But good to have you back, Eva. You want to give everyone an overview of Trouble in Tucson, because isn't this the first... And we've got a podcast just on the book too, but isn't this the first anthology that the Tucson Sisters in Crime came out with?
Yes, it is. We came out with it last year. It came out right before the Festival of Books, and we put it together for Left Coast Crime, which was held in Tucson last year. I'm not going to do another anthology until 2026. So I'm trying to, our sister chapter Desert Sleuths does an anthology every other year, and theirs is coming out next year, and I don't have enough time to get one out this year. So I'm going to wait until 2026 to put one out. So I'll do a call for stories next year for that.
Awesome. Awesome. So they have to be a member, right, of Tucson Sisters in Crime.
They need to be a member of one of the Arizona chapters. I open it up for the whole state because you get but it has to be about Tucson. The next anthology will be about Tucson. And since I'm the one reading them, I'll know if they're faking it because I know Tucson pretty darn well.
Well, that's what crime is about, right? How good you can fake something or fake somebody out.
But you can't fake setting. I mean, that's it.
Yeah.
You know, you can do a lot of stuff, but I know Tucson really well, and I know it well enough to know if somebody's faking the setting.
You know, that happens in movies too. It's annoying. It's really annoying when people don't do the research. Then you just like you just invested money in this book, and then why didn't you just do it right in the first place? If you're going to spend that much time on a book, on a story, do it right. So I think we should kill those people off immediately. I'm just into the killing fields today. I don't know what's
Yes,
going
you
on, but
are.
just like that's it, off with your head. No, I'm kidding. But you know, ladies, you've all written such amazing books. Some of you have actual series for folks to get connected with. So I want to introduce each of you on. And audience, as always, like I said, links are in the show notes for the website, so you don't have to sit and jot everything down. We don't want you to have to work. This is fun stuff. So I mentioned iguanas. So I'm going to bring Elaine A. Powers back on the show. ElaineApowers.com is her website, as well as lyricpower.net. And she's written so many books, but she really knows about reptiles. She knows about animals. And she does a lot in regards to helping our youth and children to understand the natural world. So welcome back, Elaine. How are you?
Thank you. I'm doing great.
Good. Is there any iguanas killing something off lately, or what's happening in the iguana world?
It's mostly being trampled by tortoises right now.
Oh.
Iguanas are being fairly laid back. so,
Huh.
all
Well,
always exciting in the reptile world.
that's cool. And so do people look at you like, what are you doing writing, you know, books about reptiles and even birds and things and doing in Tucson Sisters in Crime? Do people like kind of give you the eye like, what? Why?
Exactly, because I'm supposed to be writing mysteries, which I did start out to do. My main character was going to be a reptile rescuer, actually an iguana rescuer. But then I got sidetracked with science-based children's books. But I am now back to writing mysteries. So maybe this year or next, I'll actually have a couple mysteries out. And yes, they do involve reptiles.
Awesome. Awesome. And you're going
But
to be, everybody on the panel is going to be at the Tucson Festival of Books. So you can meet everyone, which I think is really cool. Do you take your iguanas out to things like that, or is that too taxing for them?
it's actually too cold. They need
Oh.
to be in the 80s and 90s, and this year is supposed to be around 70, which is a perfect temperature for wandering around a big festival. So
Yeah.
yeah, no, they don't get to go, unfortunately. But the
Okay.
Tucson Herpetological Society will be there, and they might have some reptiles.
Ah, that'd be cool for people. And do you like to meet people at the booths when you do the Tucson Festival of Books to be able to meet people and connect with new and new readers, possible new readers, and people that have read your books?
Oh, absolutely. It's so heartwarming when they come up and say, "Okay, Lane, where's your new book? We need the new one this year." But seeing kids drag their parents over because they're interested in looking at books, you know, that gives me hope for the future.
I'm excited about this. I wish we were there to be able to go to this festival and meet you all in person, but we'll do that at some point. We'll get there. I want to bring our next guest on who also knows about animals. She's a field geologist. Well, she worked as a field geologist. She taught geology, paleontology. See, that's a little animals and oceanography. And she's now a writer. She writes fiction, nonfiction, and poetry. Her name is Susan Cummins Miller. So you can go to SusanCumminsMiller.com. So welcome back, Susan. How are you?
I am wonderful. Thank you very much, Lisa.
Hey, it's good to have you back. And now, do you kill people off, you know, with falling rocks or what?
Oh, pretty much. If Frankie McFarlane is in the field, that's precisely what could happen. I put her in as many different situations as possible so that I don't repeat the deaths. And I try to avoid the Miss Marple syndrome of St. Mary Mead by moving Frankie around the West. I mean, there's geology everywhere. But I have to tell Elaine that, in case I haven't before, that my favorite teacher was a herpetologist. He at UC Riverside. He was just phenomenal, and I took a number of courses from him and wrote papers on fossil fossils that like mammal-like reptiles. And he said, "Okay, no problem." He wasn't expecting it, but he was very open to my participating in that way in his herpetology seminars.
That's cool. That's fun. Well, you know, they're interesting, and fossils are fascinating. They're fascinating. We just did a podcast on fossil hunting in England on the beaches, where they found in Norfolk, England, off the beach, this giant mammoth that, I mean, I think it's the biggest one or oldest one that they've found so far. And it's always interesting because then we think, oh, well, they were here. And then, like, a few years later, someone's going to find another set of bones and go, no, this was here first. You know, it's like, you know, just thinking of camels, you know, being here historically in the States, which is interesting because that's part of Southwest history too.
Oh, it is. In fact, in my master's thesis field area, we had fossil camels, and we also had a fossil rhinoceros. We had a beaver that was 6 feet tall. So you get these deposits that are maybe 17 million years old, or it depends on what part of the spectrum you're dealing with, and in North America, you have this suite of animals that people don't realize lived here so long ago. So my third book, third Frankie McFarlane, is actually set at the quarry, the main quarry for my master's thesis, a few years after the fact, however.
Wow. See, everyone, I told you this show gets crazy interesting, you know, with all these ladies. You never know what you're going to talk about. So we've gone from iguanas to camels and 6 feet beaver. Like, who knew we were going to talk about that? So good one, Susan. That's amazing when you think about it. I want to bring Kathy McIntosh on the show, and you can go to KathyMcIntosh.com, and that's Kathy, KathyMcIntosh.com. Again, all the links are in the show notes. Kathy's from California. And so, like a lot of Californians, moved to Arizona. So, you know, I know you love Tucson, but you also lived in Idaho, Kathy. But you've done some great writing, and I think it's interesting because you're also connected with animals, right? So, welcome back.
Thanks. It's good to hear you again and talk to you again, Lisa.
Ah, it's awesome to
Yes.
have you back. Yeah, you connect to animals and humor.
Well, and not in the same, well, yes, actually in the same books. My first book was about zebras and retired zoo lions and those kinds of animals up in North Idaho. And anyone who lives in Idaho knows that that's really an impossibility unless they have their own little housing. And they did not. And it was supposed to be funny. Several readers said, "Well, I didn't know we had zebras in North Idaho." So that was kind of funny in itself. But the humor was that there was supposed to be someone was trying to set up a fake zoo, a fake safari camp. And he was just kind of a nut. And my amateur sleuth brothers saved the day and saved their old family land and saved the zebras and the old retired zoo animal and the water buffalo in the meantime.
See, who knew this was going this way, people? Just saying, just saying. And so your latest book is Murder Cottonwood Style. So that kind of takes me to Arizona, thinking about all the cottonwood trees, especially south of Tucson.
Yes, and actually, there's a lot of cottonwood trees up in North Arizona too. And I choose my sites for my amateur sleuths because, like Susan, I want to avoid the Miss Marple syndrome, but mostly because I like to travel. And I don't set them in European countries because when I'm there, I'm having so much fun enjoying it that I don't want to take notes and write a book. But I decided to set one in Sedona, Arizona. But Sedona seemed almost too woo-woo to have anybody get killed, which is probably not true, but that's what happened. So I moved to my book to Cottonwood, which is right next door to Sedona, and which is a wonderful town and has a lot of history. And I think I had a little problem in that I fell in love with Cottonwood, and it ended up being almost a travelogue, Eva, rather than a mystery, because I have a chef as the heroine, as the amateur sleuth.
Oh, cool.
So she went around and ate a lot. And I talked about the various really yummy restaurants in Cottonwood. But there was murder involved as well.
There's wineries out there too, isn't there? I think there's wineries.
Oh, yeah. You can't walk 15 feet without being accosted by a wine tasting room in Cottonwood. And it's
I
really
love
great
the way you
fun.
talk, accosted by one. I love that. But it's funny when you think about, the murders and in someplace like Sedona, I'm like, you've got the meditating murderer, or murderess, It's like, oh,
That's
you
a
go in
good
for,
idea.
yeah, you could, you go in for, well, you could get into cults too. That would be cool. I think cult crime is fascinating. But anyway, yeah, Nancy and I stayed in a neighborhood surrounded by a cult, and they really did. They twirled around in white robes before they opened the gate. Like this whole like street was owned by a cult, and they would twirl around before they opened the gate. Then they'd walk out the gate and twirl around like thanking the gate, like they were going in and out of portals. It was crazy. Anyway.
Writing a mystery about that because that's a really great topic. Actually, we had cults up in North Idaho, and I chose not to dwell on that. In fact, I had mystery writers. We had conferences in Idaho, in Boise, when I lived there, and we had mystery writers who refused to come to Idaho because of their fear of the cults, which
Wow.
surprised me. That was a long time ago. I think things are a little calmer now. Mostly it's just rich people living in Coeur d'Alene and Sandpoint, Idaho.
This was a cult in Asheville, North Carolina, and the guy's apparently from Columbia, and I'm going, yeah, I know what you're doing. but apparently there's like whole websites put up about them raping people when they went for a massage with the cult people. So that's where I was going. You could do that. You could, anyway, this Who knows? Where you can go so many ways in how to, crime and murder. It's exciting. But now let's, we've talked about animals and cults and iguanas and all these different animals. Let's go to the garden because the desert garden is a great place to bury bodies. Now, I don't know if all of you've been following what's been going on with Lake Mead, where all these bodies are popping out as the water goes down. So you can get caught with this, but I want to bring Marty Eberhardt on. So Marty, you come from the botanical garden background, right, Marty?
I actually was director of Tucson Botanical Gardens for many years, and then the Water Conservation Garden in San Diego.
Oh,
So when
cool.
I thought about writing a murder mystery, I thought, well, if there's one thing I know about, it's the inner workings of botanical gardens. That's what I better set things in.
So, okay, so that because that's interesting too, because you got cactus, you got snakes in there. My mom, Nancy, and I went when during COVID, we were, I was going to say, trapped in place, sheltered up in the Joshua Tree area at our friend's bed and breakfast. And we went out for a morning walk, and there was like a desert lot, very empty. And, I found a shovel in the middle of this desert lot. And so they were doing some construct like new housing on the outside, but it didn't make sense where this shovel was. And it was brand new. So I'm like, oh, I'm going to give it to my friend Jerry. We came walking out of the desert, and there's a lady walking her dogs. And she just looked at me like, what are you doing coming out of the desert with a shovel? And I'm like, it's not what it looks like. I promise. I promise. But I wanted to, Marty, do you have a website for folks, or do people get your book straight from like Amazon, Death in a Desert
No, I
Garden,
have a
your novel?
website, and they are you can find them at bookstores. My website is martyeberhart.com. Do you want me to spell it out?
It's Eberhard is, yeah, Eberhardt.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure if I
And Marty with
pass
a
a
Y.
spelling. Yeah, I want to pass a spelling test. Well, I have a bunch of writers surrounding me here. And then you also wrote Bones in the Back 40. But your I wanted to touch on, I know that you also go to Silver City, New Mexico, which is awesome. I love that area. But your covers, the design of your front covers of your books are exquisite. Who did those? They're beautiful.
A guy named Bill Simonton and I couldn't agree more. I couldn't be happier. The first book cover, I said I want it to be arresting, botanically accurate, and a little bit menacing. And he wrote me back and said, I'm in. So it started from there. And my publisher was totally on board. So that was cool too.
Very cool. That's beautiful. Well, this is cool that you're into writing. And is that something for you that you started? You know, was it always in the back of your garden mind to write?
Well, I've always liked to write, but I was a garden administrator, which leaves you no time to do anything creative, frankly. But it was really fun to quit having to run nonprofits and be able to start using the right side of my brain.
Very cool. And does it help to be in a community like the Tucson Sisters in Crime?
It does, although I'm in Tucson not that much. I mostly do live in Silver City, New Mexico, which is about 3 hours away. Tucson Sisters in Crime. I'm also in Women Writing the West, which is a very supportive group. So yeah, it's really good to have sister writers.
Very cool. Very cool. I want to go to Lauren Christopher, and she is here on the show. You can go to her website, Lauren Christopher, and that's Christopher with a CH, and it's LAURYN. Again, all the links are in the show notes. Welcome to the show, Lauren. How are you?
Hi, it's a windy morning here, but doing pretty well.
That's good. Lauren, tell everybody about your hit Lady for Hire novels.
Well, it's always been interesting for me to read mysteries where, the sleuth is out to catch the killer, but I have a background in psychology, and part of my curiosity was what was the killer thinking? And so I tend to write far more often from the bad guy's point of view. And so, of course, what am I going to do? I'm going to write the hit lady instead of writing the person hunting the hit lady. So, I started
Wow.
out creating this woman who, she works in mergers and acquisitions by day, and when she has, jobs that take her into different places, she does the necessary for clients who don't want to get their hands dirty. And I've had quite a bit of fun with it, although she tries to make the murders look as accidental as possible, because if it's an accidental death, it's far less likely to be investigated. And my husband has sometimes worried when he's seen the big book of poisons sitting on our table, wondering if he needs to be worried about anything. But
Well,
no, it's quite a challenge trying to figure out how she constructs and plans and gets away with murder.
oh, literally, and I think a lot of times we forget about women criminals. And if you look in, history, and Arizona, I don't know what it is about Oklahoma. They have some crazy women killers. Oklahoma, I don't know what they did, but something happened there. But Arizona itself has some fascinating outlaws and murderers, and murderesses, I should say, right? So it's fascinating to me that you're writing from the women killers' perspective, because we're also very multifaceted as women, multitasked. And does that come into play when you're writing about a woman's personality, the psychology part of it?
Absolutely. She doesn't, I don't tend to write about the story, the assignments that are easy. I write about the ones that bother her, where she gets personally invested in whatever it is that, person that she is after. If she, in one of the books, she took the job, did the job, and then discovered more about it and took it on herself to go deeper. And a little bit of vigilante justice there because she has the skills. So it's, but yeah, I like to look at what makes her tick and what bugs her. And if you have a professional assassin with work-related issues, somebody's gonna die.
Well, that's real pretty.
Well,
Are your stories set in the desert in Tucson?
my stories are set in a variety of different places. She travels. So,
Oh, that's
my
good.
hit lady is actually, she's actually based out of Philadelphia, but most of the stories could be anywhere in the country.
Oh. 'Cause she's for hire. She can go where she wants. She's a
Exactly.
traveler. Yeah, you've got to watch out for pet sitters like we do as we travel. I always think there's a whole series of pet sitters that Anyway, I shouldn't say that.
Ironically, my hit lady has a Patagonia.
Oh my gosh, are you kidding me? Oh my gosh, this
I
is
am not. I am
hysterical.
not kidding. The stories are written from her point of view, and I needed her to have somebody she could talk to. And so she brainstorms with her iguana, who just he'll, you know, I mean, he'll stare at her balefully, or he'll just, you know, be more interested in whatever fruit she's cutting up or something. And she kind of, you know, there's interplay between her and the iguana. It's funny.
I love this. I love this. I want to bring our next guest, Lori Fagan, on the show. You can go to her website, readlorifagan.com, and that's Laurie. Welcome to the show, Lori. How are you?
Thank you, Lisa. I'm great, and it's so great to be here with all these other fabulous women writers celebrating this month. Absolutely.
It is, you know, because it is not just the Tucson Festival of Books, but it is Women's History Month. And I think it's important that we look at women from, you know, all walks of life or all strokes of pen. You know,
Sure.
not, does anybody use a pen anymore? But you know what I mean? It's really cool, and it's good to have you here, looking at your history in broadcast, right? So you've done a little bit of everything in media.
Right. I started off in commercial radio, went to commercial television, worked in cable television. I've written for magazines and newspapers. My late husband and I owned a community newspaper for 13 years. I've written
Wow.
screenplays, murder mystery plays, some stage plays as well, and just have a lot of fun writing.
I just want to say, doesn't running a community newspaper lead you to want to write murder? Like, literally, it's so hard.
You know
Newspaper
what's,
work is not for the ill and weak of heart. It is hard. It is really hard.
that's true. That's true. It is. However, being writing nonfiction for most of my, you know, adult career as a journalist, I thought, well, I couldn't possibly write fiction, you know, and then I found out how freeing it is to make up stuff, you know, and you don't have to be so tied up with all those facts. So, yes, once I finally got into the mode of realizing what fun it is to just make things up, then it took everything took off, right?
But you have to still do the research of, like, if you're going to write
Sure.
about a gun, you better have that correct, you know.
Absolutely. The police procedural elements of it definitely have to be correct, and there is still a lot of research to be done. But if you back yourself into a corner, you don't have to stick to those facts quite so tightly, and you can work your way out.
That's kind of fun, though, too. Just don't
It is.
explode yourself. You know, you don't want to back
That's true.
yourself into a corner and kill yourself off. That we can't have
That's
that.
true. No, that would not be good. That would not be
No,
good.
that would not be fun. But does it help to be part of the Sisters in Crime? I know that you're in Tucson, you're the International Sisters in Crime chapters, LA, San Diego, Grand Canyon. So it seems to me that you understand that importance, because don't you also not only have the camaraderie of fellow women writers, but aren't you also using it to learn with the different workshops and things like that?
Absolutely. All the chapters have just been terrific because they all offer something a little different. Again, we know it's a solitary world, being a writer. So that's, like you said, the camaraderie is great to meet these different women and learn from them and be inspired by them. And then the webinars, seminars, workshops, classes, monthly meetings, all those things, just add and enrich, everything as well. So I've definitely gotten a lot out of all the chapters, and certainly appreciate the Tucson chapter for letting us. And I'm in the Chandler area, which is in the greater Phoenix area of Arizona, but love to come down to Tucson, so that'll be fun.
Oh, that's awesome. And then you want to give everyone an overview, because you have the Behind the Mic series, Mysteries. That's your
Right.
main novel series for everyone to. And how many do you have in there now?
I have three novels in the first series, Behind the Mic Mysteries, Fade Out, Dead Air, and Bleeder. And they are
Nice.
actually all, they're all radio terminology. Okay.
Right.
But I felt like they were just a little more sinister to meet with the whole crime fiction arena. And I write about a young radio reporter, which is where I got my start in journalism. And she covers the crime beat for her Chandler, Arizona radio station. But she also helps the police department solve cold cases. So that's a second mystery in every story. And then, because she's in this gritty crime world all day, she writes these kind of campy murder mystery podcasts at night. And for my audiobooks, which I narrated, I took actors into a studio to record their voices, live sound effects. My son created all the music for it. And we just had a great time doing the audiobook portion of it, too. And then I just finished a new manuscript in a new series called Behind the Lens Mysteries about a television reporter photographer, of which I also used to be one. So I can send her literally around the world, and I do. So I think that's going to be fun. I'm considering self-publishing that one. So stay tuned.
Cool. Very cool. That's exciting. And I'm glad we're going around a little bit here, you know, from Tucson on out. And Tucson's such an icon. Like, to me, I think, you know, it's a gastronomy capital, a UNESCO World, you know, gastronomy heritage area. And I just look at this going, gosh, how many people can get killed off through food in Tucson? Because that's like one of the first things, the beauty, the desert beauty, the Sonoran Desert, the biodiversity, but the cultural diversity. But the food brings everyone together. It's like, here, you want to taste my prickly pear margarita? Let's see what happens to you. So I love that part of Tucson. But Dr. Ranzel is back on the show. Dr. is such a joy to have on. She may play music if you meet her at the Tucson Festival of Books. I encourage you to go to her website, dr-ransdell.com. Welcome back, Dr. How are you?
Hey, the coffee kicked in, so it's all good.
Uh-huh, here she is. She's up and running. She's off and going. So any mariachi music going to happen at the Tucson Festival of Books?
There's usually a student group that plays on one of the main stages. Tucson Festival of Books doesn't pay for any of the entertainers, so they have to, you know, come of free will. The group I play with, they trust me, they won't play unless you're going to pay. So.
Yeah, I know. And so it should be like that. But I know the Tucson Festival of Books is, you know, it's free for people to attend, which I think is fantastic. And I think that helps for the authors to get more people to your booth, right? And so that they can spend money on the books. That's what we want.
That is exactly what we want.
Yeah, yeah. So give everyone an overview of your books, Dr., because they're fun. Definitely got some Tucson flavor in there, right?
For the most part. So I have 5 books with Andy Veracruz. He's my mariachi violinist. I did a lot of mariachi violin work here at El Mariachi Restaurant until they went out of business. Now we just have privates. Today I have a private, have an anniversary party to play later today. So I had a lot of fun torturing Andy, and he was in and out of Tucson, but he followed a woman to Tucson, as women do. You know, they tracked men some way or another. Right now he's resting. I have a book called Party Wine that I actually set in my cousin's village in northern Italy. I'm a whole quarter Italian. That's the most important part. Much more fun than my other relatives, I have to say. And that, I just got the audiobook, so that was a lot of work. Lori, I should have gone to you. But anyway, so that was a nice project to do. And then I actually have a book that's set almost entirely in Tucson, which I don't usually do because I'm a vagabond. I go around. So I have a new book that's called Dervla Alarms the Nanas in Tucson. You know, it's a big Hispanic population. So I have my character hooked up with an Hispanic guy. And then he, as sometimes happens with Hispanic guys, does very bad things. And she's so angry. She goes to say goodbye to his grandma and his great aunt, and instead they all get involved in a mystery together. So that's my latest thing.
Wow. Wow. So you're off and running, man. This is cool. Now, have you been to the Tucson Festival Books before, like in with the Tucson Sisters in Crime?
Yeah, it's been a really, really great event, except for one year. I don't know, it was about 5 years ago. It rained, and gosh, people in Tucson aren't used to rain, so they stay inside mostly when it rains. So we didn't have very good attendance that year.
Wow.
Other than that, it's really been a blast, because especially right after COVID, people were just hungry to find out about new books and to talk to anybody, but to talk to authors in particular. So what I think the beauty of it is, above all, is that people just get out and get to know different authors and talk to them. And we have a chance to talk to each other because, you know, we have monthly meetings, but those are quick. So when we're hanging out at the Festival of Books, we have time to really talk to each other and find out what's going
Oh,
on, trade
oh,
secrets.
oh. Now, did you write a story for the Trouble in Tucson anthology?
Oh, but it was so
Oh.
competitive, mine didn't make it in, but that's okay. I'll
Uh-oh,
find a home for
Eva.
that story eventually.
Well, that happens, right? Where you can't win everything. And I think that's something that we all have to go through as writers, musicians, anybody that applies for things. We do a show with the National Parks Arts Foundation, and they have residencies, artists in residencies. In fact, one in Saguaro National Park, by the way, where artists and writers included can stay for a month in a park and create. And they have some the most top-notch, and they don't always get in, and it's just the luck of the draw, to keep going, to keep doing that. So, Eva said she's working on another one. So, there you go. Keep going with it. So, you mentioned audiobook, and this is something I want to bring up because from our, all these interviews we do over the years, a lot of times, and I have a good friend who is a blind musician, and he always goes, "Oh, I want to read this book. Is it out on audio?" And I go, "Not yet." And what I'm starting to get in statistics is that readers, it's almost divided in three. Like, here's the Kindle, the hard book, and the audio. So was that something very important for you to think of when doing the audio, and how to time it as an author to do the audio book? Was it important?
I just have so many people that ask me about an audiobook, and then I have some friends who are getting a little older and then they're having more trouble reading, or I have friends who are busy who are like, "Hey, I need some book to listen to while I'm doing laundry or stuff like that." So I've become more aware of how important the audiobook market is. I myself am not a very good listener, but I appreciate that other people are. So anyway, when I was at Killer Nashville, I met a guy, Scott Ellis, and he and his wife put together audiobooks, and it was a very, very fun process because they have, like maybe five or six readers. I got to listen to them and then choose one, and she did an audition and she was great. So it was really fun to listen to somebody else narrate my book. I'd been hesitant because I wanted to do it myself, but I have a day job, darn it. And so I just haven't had time to do audiobooks. So that's why I finally caved in and thought, okay, let me try it this way. It was a really fun process. They did a great job. And so I hope I find a lot of listeners for this new project. The new book I have, I'm already in production with an audiobook for it because it's just getting so popular.
It really is. I think it's, I mean, podcasting is not going away. It's just getting bigger and people listen when they drive, and it's cool. And it is important to have someone professional too, I think. Or if it's a memoir, it's cool to have the author read it themselves. But yeah, there's a whole art to it. So it's a whole new industry. I love it. I love it. Janet Alcorn is our next guest, and she was on our show recently talking about Trouble in Tucson, the anthology that is out now. And you can get it at the Tucson Festival of Books or go to TucsonSistersInCrime.org, and you can link to Amazon and get it there. So welcome back, Janet. How are you?
I am doing great. Thanks for having me back.
Okay, so I know you're the president of the Tucson Sisters in Crime. So have we done a good job promoting it yet? I just
Oh,
want
absolutely. This is
to
fantastic.
know. Just in the fact that I'm kidding around, but I think it is important to have the right organizations because sometimes when you start, especially if it's a new career or a new endeavor, and you get your feet wet in writing, it like we were saying, it's solitary, but at the same time, we can kind of, especially as women, we can be negative to ourselves on a new project that's creative, right? So I think
Yes.
this could be a way to not do that to ourselves.
Absolutely. And you made an excellent point about when you're new. I took up fiction writing fairly late. I've only been doing this for, gosh, this year it'll be 10 years. I don't know where those 10
Wow.
years went, but at any rate, and I'm in my late 50s, so I mean, I came to it pretty late. And I just messed around and I thought, oh, I can't, this isn't really something I could ever do. But I'd always wanted to. So I'm just going to try this, right? And So I fiddled around, and then by sheer happenstance, ended up connecting with a NaNoWriMo group when I was still living up in Flagstaff. And the people from there, we formed this critique group. And without those folks, I don't think I would have ever let anybody look at my writing. You know, but they were like, this is actually good. And, you know, here's some things you can work on, but you should enter it in this contest. And then when I moved to Tucson, Tucson Sisters in Crime was the first group I found. And so I think those connections are essential, right? To get you out of your own head and out of your own office and actually putting your work out there. It's scary, but it's a lot easier when you have people rooting for you.
And also when you go through rejections and you think about how authors, you know, submit their stories or books, you know, to publishers like, you know, Gone with the Wind. I don't know if we're allowed to talk about that book anymore. Who knows with all these banned books? They need to stop banning books. Can I just say that with all you on the show? Can we like
Absolutely.
universally say, you know, that, you know, I have more than a shovel up to say about that. You know, you can't do that. And if you don't like what's in the book, put it down. But you know, to go through critiques is also something to learn about. So
Yes.
because it's something personal, you know, because you've written something creative. So does that, do you also learn in an organization like the Tucson Sisters in Crime, how to take in the critiques and do the and use those critiques in a positive, active way?
I think Sisters in Crime at the national level actually does a really good job with this. And I'm also in the Guppies chapter, which is an online chapter. It's for the great
What are we
unpublished.
going to fish now?
Yeah, right. And they have guidelines for critiques that are, you know, are very well thought out about how to both give and receive feedback. Because it is emotional and it is personal, and it's very easy to take it very personally. And so you know, it's a skill, right? And it translates, I think, even into the workplace, not just in writing, learning how to give and receive feedback. It's difficult, but it's absolutely necessary if you're going to learn and grow.
Well, we can also use creative language when this kind of stuff happens too. I'm just saying we can get better at that. Janet, I want to tell that you do have a story in the Tucson, Trouble in Tucson anthology, Adam Carmona and the Case of the Saguaro Ripper. So of course you had to use the saguaros in there, right? So do you want to give people just a little glimpse at that? I know we're going to have a link, everyone, to the interview we did on the Trouble in Tucson anthology in here with, you know, all of the interviews we've done with ladies from and even a gentleman from the Tucson Sisters in Crime. But you give everyone just a little splash of the story so they know why they need to get this book.
Absolutely. So, Adam Carmona is a detective with Tucson PD and head of a joint task force tracking the worst serial killer in Tucson history, who has been nicknamed by the press the Saguaro Ripper, because you know we know the press likes to give these nicknames to people. And he gets this nickname because he stows his victims in saguaro cactuses and leaves them there to die. He likes to gut them and leave them on the cactus. I should warn you, I tend to write a lot darker things than some of my sisters. Cozy is not really in my vocabulary unless we're talking about a Friday night after work under a blanket. So, you know, you read my stuff. It comes with all the content warnings. But you know, sometimes writing over the top can be really, really fun, but that's sort of the flavor of that story. And I will say that it was inspired by the saguaro in my front yard that has this very large arm near to the ground. You know, most saguaros, the arms are fairly high up, and the cactus in my front yard has this one very low to the ground. And I remember looking at it one day and going, that would be a great place to stow a body. And thus the story was born. This is life with a crime writer. And my husband, who's a huge horror fan, was like, yeah, it would be. And then we went on this walk and we kind of planned out pieces of the story
We talk
because
about
we are
pieces. This is
strange
good.
people.
No, I love this. I love this. I want to go, Marty. What do you think? You're the botanical lady here. What do you think?
What do I think about what?
Well, using saguaros as a way to store bodies. I mean,
Oh, I think it's
saguaros
a
are pretty
fabulous
neat.
idea. I think it is and you know, I think plants can definitely also be murder weapons. In my first book, A Falling Eucalyptus Branch surprisingly knocks someone to their death. So I didn't want to go with typical poisons, but yeah, plants certainly contain plenty of poisons too.
Now, Elaine, I wanted to go to you because you also have a story inside the Trouble in Tucson anthology.
I do. And it was selected because I chose not to go with humankind murders, but murders that take place in the animal world. So
See,
I
here.
think that the novelty of that. So yeah, as a biologist, I tend to look beyond people.
Susan, didn't you do one too?
I did. Mine was 112 in the Shade. So it's obviously set in June. It's set with an early onset or a timed onset of the monsoon, which usually traditionally occurs around the 24th of June, but could come as late as the end of July or not come at all. But there have been flash floods as a result of the monsoon, which uncovered a body, which of course Frankie McFarlane was out hiking around, preparing to introduce one of her classes to how streams work and rivers erode, and she discovers the body. So I'm reintroducing Frankie, who's been on hiatus, I'd say, for a few years, and also other characters from the Frankie novels. I do have a police detective, sheriff's detective, who appears in a number of the books. So it's set in Tucson, actually not very far from where I live, and in Sabino Canyon, or in
Oh, I
not in
love.
Sabino Canyon, but on Sabino Creek.
Oh, yeah.
The Sabino Creek and Bear Creek come together. So it's after that point that it's set. So it's geology brings it forth, and then the police take over and solve the case.
I love it. I love it. Eva, you would say that would mean that she really did set it in Tucson, right?
Yes, she did.
Yeah, she did. She did it. Kathy, I want to go to you too, because didn't you also have a book, not a book, a story in the Trouble in Tucson anthology?
Yes, I did. And it's a real shame that right this second, I can't remember the name of it, but I can tell you that my, and I can't find the book. Of course, I've been running around looking. It features my main sleuth, Madrone Hunter, who is half Hispanic and half, Anglo.
It's called
And
Something Extra. That's the
yeah,
story
okay.
title.
It's called Something Extra. And she is often called upon to help one of her relatives in this large family, a cousin or something. So at this point, she helps a cousin try to find someone who has been marring his works of art on houses. Actually, he's a house painter, and they used to be, oh, those people. Anyway, he finds damage every time he paints a house in an exclusive neighborhood. And he calls on his cousin Madrone to help him find and track down that person.
Graffiti.
I tend to be humorous in everything I write, and I can't stop laughing, actually. So it's more humorous and light than, for example, Janet's story is, which
Well, you
allows the
need.
reader, to choose and pick and have a light moment and a serious moment, which is always
Yeah,
fun in an anthology.
I think anthologies, I'm curating this, Eva, putting it together. I mean, you had to kind of, it's not necessarily always the craft of the writing. Obviously, that's important, but it's also about having that balance for a reader, right? It's like, what is the reader going to read next? Okay, now we just, this is a bloody mess under a saguaro. There's pieces of toe missing or whatever. I don't know. Now I'm in that headspace. And then an iguana comes out and eats the other foot. I don't know, but you need to have that balance where there's something funny after that, because if it's like 10 bloody stories, one after the other, then you'd have to change the title, right?
Right. Well, no, it's always was always going to be Trouble in Tucson because of Left Coast Crime. But finding the balance, picking the stories and And setting up the table of contents, that's all a matter of the type of story and the length of the story. And you don't want, like you said, you don't want three police procedurals in a row if you have humorous stories or other stories. It's a little balancing act, and even picking the stories. If you have three excellent stories but they're all really similar, you've got to pick the one that's going to fit best. And then you're telling people like DR, I'm sorry, I can't use your story at this time. And I'm that's as far as an editor is, that's and Lynn, Lauren, Christopher, or Lynn, as I know her, she knows how hard that is sometimes, is you've got to tell people who've written really good stories that I can't use your story right now.
Yeah, so it will go somewhere else. I mean, that's the I mean, it's like that during, you have to, I said this on a show that had to be canceled because I said this. I said, you have to sometimes kill the babies, the things that you really like in writing. You have to kill the babies. I think I've talked about that with you, some of you before on shows, and I did it on a show about the end of life. So I had to stop. I had to cancel that podcast. I'm
Kill
sorry.
your darlings is the other term. Kill your
Oh, well
darlings.
done. That's a bet. Well done, Lori. I'm going to use that from now on.
There you
Because
go.
I was like, "You're killing the babies," and she just looks at me and starts laughing because it was a podcast with a friend who has a very good sense of humor as well. And so we had to kind of start that over, but we got the giggles about it because that's not what people want to hear at the end of life. But it is hard because it's like in putting an album together, you may have your favorite song, and it could have even be the song that inspired the album, and it has to get kicked off. It sucks, So it's interesting putting it all together. Ladies, with this being a show that is also on our brand new Women Making History podcast, it also being the weekend, 9th and 10th at the Tucson Festival of Books, 9th and 10th, 2024. Everyone free to go. Free admission, I mean. So let's take a look at women that inspire you, just in closing. Just one woman that, and we could go on for years with the amount of women that have done amazing things, but one woman that is inspiring to you as an individual, a writer maybe, but one woman that just inspires you. So I'm going to start with you, Lauren. You're the psychologist, so let's go to you. Who inspires you?
Actually, so many names, and I can't even think of one off the top of my head. I loved reading the work of a science fiction author, C.J. Cherry, and the imaginative worlds that she would build and the complicated politics and machinations of the people and the things that were also people in her books. And she would just pull you into those worlds and let your imagination just ride along with it. And I think she was probably one of the fiction writers that I always aspired to have my work, sit on the same shelf with hers. And even though we write in different genres, I had leaned over into the mystery and crime side more than into the science fiction side. I still admire her work greatly. And so I would say that she's probably up there.
Right on, right on. Everyone, Lauren's website is laurenchristopher.com. Again, the links are in the show notes, so check that out. I want to go to you, Lori. Lori Fagan, again, is readlorifagan.com. Lori, who inspires you as a woman?
Well, I'm going to give two. Ruth Bader Ginsburg just always inspired me, but a fairly new writer, Yasmin Ango, Angoe. Oh my gosh, she's written a couple books. Her name is Night. They Come at Night, Knight. Her audiobooks are unbelievable. It's set in South Africa, Nigeria. Just very, very interesting. And Janet, it's got a female arson assassin. Sorry, female assassin group, basically. So very, very interesting.
Awesome.
Thanks for
Now
having
let's,
me, Lisa.
oh, it's good to have you on the show. Elaine, let's go to you. Who inspires you?
That would be my grandmother, Nellie Poe Powers, who, after she retired at 65 from teaching school, she began her second half of her life. She served 3 full terms in the Peace Corps. She got in
Wow.
her Corvair and packed a suitcase and drove to Alaska. And this was in the 60s when the road to Alaska was not paved and was really a rough place to travel. So just that spirit of continue to live life. If you're not up and moving, you're dead. So I try to take that heart and just live life to its fullest.
Oh, I love that. I love that. That's a good story. My Nana was like that. She was one of the first ladies to ride a Model T Ford across the country. She a little Spitfire, little teeny little British lady, and you didn't mess with her, and she drank her beer every night. I'm like her. DR, let's go to you. Who inspires you?
Many people, but I have to say, Agatha Christie, I read like all Agatha Christie's and then I got bored with them and thought, oh, and I went on to other things. But then a few years ago, I had some time off and I went to the Agatha Christie International Festival that's held in England every year where she used to
Wow.
live. And it was so cool to see that today lots of young people are interested in mystery because of Agatha Christie. Like I went to this like kind of a pub quiz thing. All these young kids knew all these things from these short stories. She was so smart psychologically. She understood about people, about how people work. And so even today, she's still an inspiration. And I think a lot of us build on her shoulders. Ellie Griffith, a UK writer. I mean, just we've just gained a lot from her, and hats off. Now I have to go back and reread those and see what I missed when I was, 14.
Wow, that I didn't know that they did that. That's amazing. So, everyone, I also want to give out a web. You know what? I'm going to just list everyone's websites. As I said, so ElaineApowers.com. I wanted to make sure I gave Elaine's website out also. For DR, it's dr-ransdell.com. And let's go back to Janet Alcorn, and that's janetalcorn.com. And also, writing novels. You've been doing a lot of this, a lot of writing short stories, anthologies, doing a podcast as well. Janet, who inspires you?
The list is very long, and the top of that list would be my mother, but I will talk specifically about writing. I became a big Outlander fangirl in the early 2010s, and there's a book called The Outlandish Companion that I was sitting there reading and fangirling about. And Diana Gabaldon talks about how she decided to write Outlander, and she said she decided that the best way to learn to write a novel was to write a novel. And that line is one of a handful of just these watershed moments in my life that pushed me to actually start writing fiction. And so I just have to
Yeah.
give credit there. Sometimes you just have to do it, and you have to learn while you're doing it, because if you wait till you think you know enough, you will be cold in your grave and never do it.
And you won't even know. Or maybe you would. Maybe you have to haunt yourself that you didn't do it. You know what I mean? Could you imagine haunting your own ghost will haunt your ghost? That'd be a trip, wouldn't it? I know that's kind of trippy, but that's cool. No, I think you're really right about that. And I think that's what they did with Nano, was really try to get people, get that pen going and get the typewriter, whatever you're doing to write. In November, have you done that? Have you done Nano, any of you?
Yep,
No, it
I
is.
have several times.
Oh, that is awesome. I think, yeah, that's a push to do, It's like Sober October. That's not happening. Okay. Just kidding.
It's a tough time of year, yeah, to do it. I got my first novel basically started. I didn't finish the whole 50,000, but I got a really good start during Nano many years ago. I wish it just was a different month than November.
It's like here, Thanksgiving, Christmas, all the holidays are coming, but I think it's that way of really pushing you, and you can take those parts and create from there. It's really about just get her done, just like what Janet was saying. So I want to go to you, Kathy. Who inspires you?
Well, like Laurie, I have two. One is Marcia Muller. She writes in the Bay Area. And when I moved to the Bay Area, I looked up all these different San Francisco writers, and Marcia Muller just, She actually came to a conference that I hosted in Boise, and she did some research on her book when she was there. And I drove around in the car with her. And she's just the kindest, nicest, and most inspiring and encouraging woman, one of them. I mean, there's so many. And the other one is kind of a future hope. And this is whatever. The first thing that came to my mind was my daughter is my inspiration. She was an environment, still is an environmental activist. So she's kind of, she thinks she's in the star of every book I write, and she inspires a lot of my books. And what I like most about my daughter, that a skill that I have never developed, is that she has the ability to talk to anyone, to have a discussion with anyone about any topic, whether they agree or disagree, and listen with empathy and get her voice heard. And I believe that that's a very, very hopeful thing for the future. So I'm really tickled for her. I don't know where she got those skills, but she's a cool person, a cool woman.
Oh, that's awesome. That is cool. Everyone, KathyMcIntosh.com. Got to get the website out there, and that's with a K. She's got the special K. Yes. Go get that. Get her a website. Also, Marty, let's go to you. MartyEberhart.com, and that's DT at the end. Marty, who inspires you?
Well, when you first said that, I thought, okay, I'm going to go with the first person who comes into my head. I wonder who it'll be. And who it was Maya Angelou. Mm-hmm. Maya Angelou has had, as I'm sure you all know, an absolutely extraordinary life of overcoming obstacles and becoming successful in so many ways. And she is such a wonderful writer and a wonderful poet, and has such grace and humanity. So I thought of her, but I also wanted to mention another writer whom I absolutely love, who is a Vietnamese writer who is also a poet, although she has a PhD in English literature. And her name is Nguyen Pham K. Mai, and she wrote The Mountains Sing. And she and it's an extraordinary book of historical fiction that takes place several decades in Vietnam from multiple perspectives. And again, this incredible poetic bent. So she is, that's my new favorite novel. It changes frequently, but that's my new favorite novel, and I wanted to mention her.
Right on, right on. Susan, we got to go to SusanCumminsMiller.com. Susan, who inspires you?
Well, it's Women's History Month, and I keep going back. I mean, yes, I'm surrounded by amazing women writers every day. I write not only crime fiction, but poetry and nonfiction. And I published an anthology a few years ago which was a look into my roots as a woman writer of and from the West. And it was called A Sweet Separate Intimacy. And there were 34 women writers who published during the settlement years of the frontier, what they had to go through in order to get published was extraordinary, and their lives were extraordinary. And I was speaking of a couple of them just yesterday to another writer, and Frances Dana Barker Gage came out, and none of you will know who she is, but you only know what Sojourner Truth said during her famous speech, because this woman, who was the president of the conference, wrote it down. So she was a journalist, and she wrote novels. And we're talking about somebody, you know, more than 100 years ago, who spent her life trying to abolish slavery, helping set up Red Cross sites, helping humanity in every way that she could, and writing about it. So there are 34 of these women. It's hard to choose just one, but they all, including Frances, inspire me every single day.
That's a cool story. And it's interesting how, when you think about, women on the frontier, like, it's kind of crazy. When you think about the women in the East Coast that were, set up in la-di-da, oh, just go write and learn how to play the piano. And then the West, here comes these women that, even covered wagons. And you go up to places like in northern Colorado, and southern Wyoming, and they dry farmed, and they're still doing it. Like, there's these cemeteries out in Texas, these little tiny cemeteries, and these women are behind these families that made everything work in the toughest times, and so the frontier stuff is just, it's huge what women did back then. And to write it down, it was frivolous almost, yet at the same time, I think it was the way that was their personal salvation of keeping things together, was writing, So very cool, Susan. Very cool. Eva, last but not least, who inspires you?
My current inspiration is Gail Carriger. She's
Oh, yes.
a she writes in steampunk and she writes in science fiction, and she's got one nonfiction book out. I've just listened to her at Superstars and then yesterday at the Wild West Con. This woman is brilliant. She has degrees in archaeology and she can talk characters and writing, and she can talk business, and it's kind of it just she kind of blows me away. So right now, that is my current female writer inspiration.
Very cool. Very cool. Everyone, evaeldridge.com. I'm going to throw a name out. Helen Hunt Jackson.
Yes.
I got to bring her up because everywhere we go, here she is again. We used to live in Julian, San Diego, and the town of Ramona is named after the play, which is written, by Helen Hunt Jackson. Then we started covering Pinnacles National Park area, and she was in San Juan Bautista. And this is a very historic, it's like the crossroads of California. And she tried to rent a room to write. And she was very, she helped in regards to go against racism and also about the Native Americans, just trying to help and spread the word of what atrocities we did. She tried to rent a room, and there was this kid who was just being really, really loud. And I've actually been to the house, but I had no idea that this is where she tried to rent. And it was from this Irish family, a woman, and woman, I think, was single, or like her husband had died or something. And she said, so told the kid to shut up, basically. And the woman, the Irish woman, got mad and yelled at her and screamed at her and swore at her and kicked her out of the house. So she moved. So I think she ended up in Ramona after that, and that's when she was writing all of that. But also up in north of Florence, Colorado, Eva knows that area very well. There's the Cheyenne Falls, and that's where there she was again. And I'm like, and they have a beautiful garden, and there's hummingbirds and hummingbird moths and the waterfall. And she just keeps poking up wherever we go. And I know she loved Cheyenne Mountain. And she's buried up in San Francisco. One of you were talking about the Bay Area. That's where she's buried now.
She's one of the women in my anthology.
Oh, wow.
And
So I should just shut up. I have no
no,
clue.
no, no, no. That's exactly right. And I even she dies in this historical novel that it will be coming out next year. Helen Hunt Jackson is dying as my character comes to town. So you're bringing that up. Yes, she was one of my favorites. So thank you for mentioning her.
She died in San Francisco, but she's buried in Evergreen Cemetery in Colorado Springs. But they had to move her because too many people came to her gravesite. So now she's a little bit more protected. But her story, like, I was digging up all the story for a story we were doing on her, and I'm glad you wrote her about her in the anthology, because it's actually difficult to get the truth about this lady. It was very difficult to find out the truth from the fiction, in a way. But that Irish part with that getting kicked out of San Juan Bautista, which is actually a state park, that's off of the actual park history. They actually have the written part, and There was a lot of swearing. Don't mess with the Irish women, man. Don't do it. I think she chased her out with a frying pan or something. And I was like, what? You know, so anyway, good stuff. Thank you all for joining us again, everyone. The Tucson Sisters in Crime website is tucsonsistersincrime.org. If you're going to go to the Tucson Festival of Books this year, it is March 9th and 10th in 2024. I encourage you to go to the booth. Eva, is there any specific place that people should know about if they go this year? I know you'll be there next year too, but.
We are located in booth 430, and that's in front of the main library.
Oh, well, that makes sense. You go. That's a good position.
It's a great position.
Now, are all the Tucson Sisters in Crime represented at the booth or specific ones?
No, only people who want to. They come if they want to come set up and sign books and sell books. They sign up with me, and I open it up to the other two chapters also. So that's why Lori Fagan is with us, because she's out of one of the Phoenix chapters. So that's what we do. We try to make it available to all the sisters in crime.
Very cool. Very cool. Working together is the way, ladies. That's the way. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa. Great job. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
See everybody.
Thank you for listening to Big Blend Radio. Keep up with our shows at bigblendradio.com.